Welcome to the Friends of the Homer Public Library District 31 Candidate Forum. The participants are Representative Paul Seen of Homer, Homer Mayor Beth Wythe, and John Cox of Anchor Point. The forum took place on Friday, August 6th at the Homer Public Library and was moderated by Andy Haas.
What is great for me is that this is such a nice alternative to what we hear on the TV, on the national debates, the ugliness, the acrimony, and I see you guys, I know that we've got a lot of really good questions. You've been submitting the questions, and we've been receiving them. We got a whole bunch, and I would encourage you to keep on doing so. We're going to take any questions you may want to submit to us till, let's say, 7 o'clock. I hope that we can use them all, but we'll try to use them all. There's a lot of overlapping questions, as you may guess. So if I ask one similar to yours, don't be offended if I don't use yours in particular. Let's see. This is brought to you by the Friends of the Homer Public Library. And, of course, I want to thank them and the library itself for giving us this opportunity to be here tonight. Our goal is to be nonpartisan in presenting information to you, and that's why we're trying to establish rules of fairness and how it's going to go. We just want to get you some information. So this is going to be the format. We've asked each person up here to give a brief opening statement to you. We even did it officially. We drew straws to see the order that it would be proceeding. So Paul is going to go first. This is Paul Seaton. John Cox on his left will go next, and Beth Wythe will go third with her opening statement. They'll be taking questions. Each question is going to be brief question. They're going to have 2 minutes to respond to each question. I'd like to remind you that brevity is the soul of wit. So when we ask you that, what's your favorite book, it doesn't mean you need to give us a book report. And if you feel that you don't have anything to chime in on a question, we appreciate that. But we want to give you the full opportunity to answer any questions that you'd like to.
The Art of War.
That's your favorite book. Good. Of course, I'm going to ask you to turn off your cell phones and let's take that moment, turn off those cell phones. And I don't think anyone's going to take flash photography, but don't if you're inclined. At the end, if we do end up going through all the questions and we still have time, we're going to open it up to questions from the floor. And if we do that, then I'm going to ask you questions, be limited to, let's say, 20 seconds in duration, and we'll be doing that. The questions are going to be fielded to the group, all three of them, to give them equal opportunity to respond. Everybody gives equal opportunity. So we're not asking one person just a single question, but we'll be asking all three of them. And that's the nature of the questions, the way we're doing it. At the end of this evening, we're going to try to wrap up by 8 o'clock. I'm sure we'll be able to do that. When we do that, the Friends has to put all the chairs back. So I would really encourage you to meet with your friends, to meet with the candidates, talk about things. But if you want to do that over in the kind of hallway over there, that'd be cool while we put all the chairs back. So thank you again for coming. And I will go ahead and I'll turn the microphone over to Mr. Seaton. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Andy. Good evening, and thank you for coming. I am Paul Seaton. I've been your state representative in the House for since 2003. I've been a Republican all my life. I first was interviewed Richard Nixon before he was elected as vice president. I believe in the party's big tent idea of having lots of philosophies within that tent. However, I am leery of the, just like President Eisenhower said, of a large corporate control and the military-industrial complex and their influence on elections and our electoral process. One promise I made when I first came into office and have continued with since is that I work for open government. I was appalled by the Vico scandals that occurred in the state legislature, and I supported the ethics law revision that means that closed caucuses can only work on strategy and cannot discuss the issues and take positions on bills. I work as a solutions guy and I'm a problem solver on state issues. I work with everyone that's concerned with those issues. It doesn't matter what the party is. I view our problems as Alaska problems, not party problems. The legislative process is designed to be slow. You have both the House and the Senate and multiple committees having to reach agreement. So things take a long time, but laws really need a lot of introspection to make sure that you don't get unintended consequences and looking at them from different perspectives. So the so I am a fiscal conservative, and I negotiated the largest budget cut by reducing the oil production tax credits, which passed the House with bipartisan support. I'm known as a driver for solutions, and I introduce bills to get the discussion going long before their anticipated passage. This lets kinks get worked out, and some bills serve to stimulate action before they're needed. Thank you.
For those of you that don't know me, my name is John Cox. I'm a Libra. I like long walks on the beach and a nice Merlot. Okay. Now, you know, we joke about stuff like that, and that's one of the things I learned in college, was that when you open up a speech, you do your introduction and a little joke, and then you address the issues. We've got some serious issues that facing Alaska and the United States. A little bit about myself. I joined the Navy when I graduated out of Bartlett. I did 30 years in the Navy. I was a SEER instructor. I taught survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. I helped provide a lot of the tools that our soldiers and sailors use today to protect themselves in an environment where they will be captured as prisoners of war. I've also taught PDOS, which is a peacetime detention hostage situation. So if anybody gets captured by terrorists or just hostage situation, I taught them how to survive that. I'm a father of three, grandfather of two. I've been endorsed by the Alaskan Right to Life organization. I've been endorsed by the Alaskan Republican Assembly and Joe Miller. I am a conservative. Let's see, I came to Alaska in the early 70s. My father was in the Army. Boy, that was a fast... We've got serious issues. And when I give you my word that I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I cannot be bought, and I'm not backed by anybody. Okay? What you see out on the streets and advertisement and stuff, that's all coming out of my pocket. So, other than that, thank you very much. I'll be more than willing to answer questions later. Okay? Oh, 30 seconds. Went to college at Southwestern, MB Riddle, Excelsior. MB Riddle is aeronautical, and Navy colleges as well as Harvard. All right, there you go.
Great, thank you. It's nice to hear about the two of you. I'm Beth Wyeth, and my name, as it appears on all ballots, is Mary E. and then Beth in parentheses, Wyeth. I am currently the mayor of the city of Homer. I've been representing the city of Homer for 12 years. I've had this privilege primarily by large margin in the votes in the city of Homer. I think that my service to the city of Homer has prepared me well to work on issues that are facing the state. They are issues that have faced the city of Homer for the 12 years that I have been there. I have successfully promoted legislation that's resulted in compliant government fund reserve balances, reduced budgets, establishment of the Homer Permanent Fund, reinstatement of the Economic Development Commission, reducing property taxes, and providing for our surrounding areas and visitors to help pay for the oversized infrastructures that we provide in the city of Homer. I'm used to getting things done with a full plate. I worked full-time. I had two kids when they were in school. I did all of the parenting things that you do. I went and did chaperoning. I was a fundraiser. I did Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, music, you name it. They were in it. We were doing that. And as my kids moved on out of high school, I turned my attention first to public representation, and then I went back to college, finishing my bachelor's degree in business administration with a human resource focus and a legal minor, and then a master's degree in public administration. I did not get my degrees with the purpose of being a lifelong politician, but with the purpose of providing the best public representation I could and understanding the processes so that I can do that well. I think that I am armed for public representation with my education and background, and would love to have your support in this race. I want to remind everybody, while we are in a nonpartisan setting, this is a Republican race. There are three candidates, each of us running on the Republican ballot. If you would like your voice to be heard in this election, it is incumbent that you vote in the primary on the Republican ballot if you are registered Republican, undeclared, or nonpartisan. Thank you very much, and thanks for coming out tonight. I appreciate you giving us a Friday evening.
Thank you. I think you can all, can everybody hear me just in, if I just shout out a couple questions? Beth, why don't you hold on that? And we're going to test the coordination here. We're going to each take turns. You're going to have to, I'll tell you what. I'll ask the first question. Ms. Wyeth, why don't you go first and then pass it down and we'll alter how we begin.
Okay.
So let's start off with some general questions.
1 minute.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
And again, you don't need to fill all 2 minutes, but let's start off with Beth, what was the last book you read and what newspapers do you read?
Recent history, I read the Anchorage Daily News bulletins online and the Homer News articles, primarily on online reading right now. I work full time. I am still being the mayor for the city of Homer, so I don't have a lot of free reading time. I spend a lot of that time probably focusing biblically. I'm, you know, if when you have free time, that's where you spend it when you are a Christian faith-based person. So that's where I spend most of my reading time right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I read the Homer News and the Peninsula Clarion of late and the ADN. So those are the newspapers I read. Drive was probably the last book I was reading, and I surely enjoyed those.
Okay. Scott.
I really don't have a whole lot of time to read books. The last book that I did read was a Kybe Kussler. Love him. As a business owner, owning two businesses, I read everything from the extreme left to the extreme right. And you have to filter out all the garbage in between to see what's going on. So to actually sit there and say, hey, I read the Anchorage Daily News, man, that can be a little partisan there, bias. So I don't read that stuff. I watch a lot of the news, and you have to, there's a lot of garbage on there as well.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Satan, why don't we start with you on the next one? What mistakes have you made, and how have you learned from them?
Well, probably in politics, the biggest mistake that I made was when we were considering oil tax bill SB 21. It came up on the floor of the House. I voted against it, as did two other Republicans. I thought it was a bill that I had offered in committee and on the floor 11 amendments to. And hoping to get some amendments in with better consideration in the next time when it was on reconsideration and the vote was always going to be there, I voted in favor of it. That turned out not to be a successful opportunity to get amendments in the following year. And so that was a mistake that I learned from, when you make your position known, you should just stay with it and not look at the political advantages of trying to make that work differently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Biggest mistake I ever made? A couple of them, jumping out of airplanes when I didn't need to. I think the biggest mistake I made was waiting so long in my life to get my college education. I try to push everybody, especially those young soldiers and sailors that did work for me, to get it, work on it right now, because time will creep up on you, and before you know it, you're sitting on a rocking chair going, geez, where'd time go? So that was it.
I think, looking back, I'm sure that there are many things people think that I've done in my career that are mistakes. But for me, when I read this question, the thing that came immediately to mind is I see things very clearly as they need to be, and it's hard to then go back and collect people and bring them along on the conversation. So that was pointed out to me when I was probably 30 years old, when I was in my first management position, and I have taken that to heart, and I work really hard to make sure that when I am walking on in a path for something that doesn't often make sense, to make sure people know why. There is always a reason that you're doing something, and it's important that people understand why you're pursuing that, even when it may not make sense to them. So that would be it.
Okay, thank you. Another one, who's your personal hero, and what are your personal interests outside of politics?
My personal hero, of course, is my parents. My mom, of course, just passed away last year. God, of course, which is just recently found And that's one of the mistakes I made in life, is I waited so long to become a Christian. What was the other part of the question?
What are your personal interests?
Personal interests. Oh, I love bodybuilding. I love teaching. I used to teach martial arts to children with special handicaps. I love playing the guitar. I just enjoy life altogether. Just sitting on my porch watching the river go by when I do get a chance and appreciate what God's given us.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Number one personal hero, Jesus Christ, thank you for the salvation of my soul. In my free time, I love spending time with my family. My in-laws have a lovely home across the bay, and my husband kidnaps me usually Friday night. This summer has been really long because I've gone three times. But we go across the bay, and then we spend much of our summer there just relaxing and trying to unwind from all of the things that take place, particularly politics.
Okay, fair enough. Mr. Seaman?
Yeah, within the political realm, I'd say a hero would be Jay Hammond. So much he did for this state, and in fact, that's why with the suggestion by Jim Reardon, I sponsored a bill, and we now have Jim Reardon Day each year on his birthday, and so I think that it's someone we need to honor and respect.
And your personal interests outside of politics?
Oh, I used to be a lapidary, a rock hound. That's what first brought me to Alaska. I still have a lot of interests there, as well as in education and early childhood education.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to campaign funding. I have no idea who starts, but it seems like you guys are working that out well. Ms. Wyatt, let's talk about campaign funds. Can you explain the origins of your campaign donations? If you are, why are you accepting money from out-of-state sources?
The majority of my campaign has been funded personal finances. I have contributed over $10,000 personally into my campaign. That was not a light decision. I made the decision to run for office. I think it's really important that we get the message out that we intend to send. Beyond that, most of my campaign contributions have been made from individuals, the majority of them. I have received one out-of-state contribution from a friend from high school that years ago said, if you ever run for real office, I'm going to send you money. And so he did send money, and so that was quite flattering that he remembered that all these years later. And I have received one check from the ConocoPhillips employee group that was a contribution. And I know that those contributions raise eyes for people, but for me, I have been a strong supporter of the industry on the peninsula. And when I spend my permanent fund check, I don't ever forget where it came from. The majority of the people on the peninsula have some attachment to oil and gas in their employment, whether it's support service or direct employment. And I think it's important that we remember they are strong contributors to our economy every day, and we need not to discount them. So I don't feel badly about that. Particularly, I think of interest to people is there is an organization that has, or a group that has organized to support on my behalf. I have no influence over them. I have no participation with them. They decide how they spend their money, what they choose to advertise on, and their supporters are not directed by me. Or, you know, I don't go online and check and see who their APOC contribution list is. If you want to see anybody's contribution list, you can go on APOC. You can see who their real supporters are.
Thank you.
Campaign contributions come almost exclusively, though not exclusively, from people in the community, this community as well as up the road. I used to live out in Anchor Point, over in Seward, as well as now in Ketchmack City. I have a lot of contacts that have worked on issues with me and that are supportive. I've also received contribution from the Dentists Association, although I was probably their nemesis in the dental therapists, which they opposed and I supported. I also worked with dentists on trying to make sure that all new water systems are capable of being set up for tooth decay prevention. And so I also received the National Education Association. I received $1,000 from their contribution. I've received a couple of contributions from PACs that are associated with labor. And So it just depends on who sends those supports in. Yeah. I also received outside funding. I think there's two, one from my sister in California, and I received one from a person that used to be a resident here that still follows Alaska politics, and he sent me a $50 check, I think, from Florida. So that's the source of my campaign contributions, but almost all are from local residents in District 31.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cox.
Campaign funding for me. Well, this wallet here is pretty empty, so basically that's where it's coming from. I'm paying it for all my out of my own pocket. I have received a couple dollars from a few individuals, but what I keep telling people that have wanted to give me money, I said, listen, this shouldn't be about how much money you spend, how much money you raise. It should be about what's right for this country and the state. So what I tell a lot of people when they want to hand me money, I tell them, give it to your local school, give it to a children's hospital, give it to a veterans hospital, give it to your local church. Let's help out Alaskans. So that's why I don't take money unless they really force it on me. So.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, and none from out of state.
Okay, very good, thank you. Mr. Seaton, let's see. Please explain your feelings about corporations, specifically oil companies or their subsidiaries, financing candidates. And please also tell us if you're being sponsored or funded by any oil industry interests.
Well, one of the problems with corporations, and you know, we have the Citizen United decision now where you can have independent expenditures, you don't really know where the money comes from, is it overwhelms the actual message and the discussion from candidates. So there can be distortions that come out, and yet you can't challenge a candidate on those because they came from someplace else. So responses are being made by me to distortions that are put out in robocalls, and there's literature coming in the mail, filling people's mailbox, those kind of things, from industry lobbyists. And I understand that they want the best deal they can from oil, low oil taxes and high credits, and that is not my position. My position is that we need to protect the state treasury and the ownership of oil, which is within the people of Alaska. And so they are unhappy with me. I've been there through about four different changes in the oil tax bill. When Governor Palin was there and ACES came in, progressivity was there, which gave the people of the state a higher proportion of the profit that came off of those barrels that were produced, and that's what actually filled the CBR that we have now, which is rapidly being spent by not diversifying our revenue. So that's why they're generally oppose me, and none are supporting me.
Okay, thank you. Scott?
I am not being supported by any oil company. What I believe is it's our oil. We should not be giving any oil credits to these individuals. The state should not be in the pocket or working with these individuals to drill our oil. It is a business. These oil companies are a business. And my opinion is, if they want to come drill, come drill. If you want to try and strong arm us into giving you more money and tax credits, take your toys and get out of state. Somebody else will come here and drill for us.
Thank you. As I said before, I have received one contribution from the employees of ConocoPhillips, and I don't feel like there's any shame in that. I think of oil, I mean, oil and gas, all of the natural resources in Alaska are intended to be developed for the benefit of the rich, of the citizens. That's the intent by our Constitution, is that they will be developed for the benefit of the citizens. The state of Alaska has no mechanism in place, nor the financial wherewithal, to develop those resources on their own. That then leaves us to work with people that do that as an industrial business so that we can benefit from them. Our resources have a zero value to us sitting in the ground. It's in their extraction and sale that they have a benefit to us. And so working with people that will come in a decidedly harsher environment than many of the other places in the world that they can go and get oil and gas reserves at a much lower price to them. And so creating an environment that makes them want to develop Alaska's oil and gas is where Alaska benefits from its oil and gas. In the absence of someone extracting those resources from the ground on our behalf, there is no resource value to them. So I don't feel like oil and tax credits are selling out to the oil company. I feel like the oil and tax credit system in place currently has not given good consideration to the back cost. Oil and tax credits should not be larger than a portion of the total revenues in any given year. They should not be cumulative. If you only have $1 billion of revenue, your oil tax credit should be not more than, you know, say, maybe 5 or 10% of that. That is something that needs to be sorted out. But I think that the credits keep jobs in Alaska, they keep business in Alaska, and we need those jobs and we need that commerce. And again, I go back to when I spend my permanent fund check, I thank the oil company for the fact that I get that permanent fund check. So,
okay, thank you. Let's talk about the flip side of things, the environment. Do you believe, what measures would you take to reduce the impacts of climate change? And what would you do to protect our natural resources and wilderness? See.
Well, I was one of the participants in the original SOS out here in the bay where the boats went around and were save our seas here because with climate change and the increase in carbon dioxide, we are having problems with everything from oysters to forming shells to crabs. So we have a big problem coming, but it's a big problem. It's hard to stop that in any meaningful way at one point. One thing is that we know that the most carbon polluting source is coal, and we have a problem with Chewitna here in Cook Inlet. It may make some jobs, but in the long run, the risk of the highest carbon output from that source of energy doesn't make much sense. What I've worked on is renewable energy. Worked on the Renewable Energy Fund, worked on bringing a tidal project here, trying to get stimulation on tidal energy here at the Homer Dock. Appreciated the city's working on that as well, a several-year project, and solar energy as well. So I think that we need to look at all those forms as well as the hydropower. There's other places in the world that use exclusively hydropower for their oil and gas development, even offshore platforms like in Norway. And the reason is because they put in a carbon tax, and so then it's advantageous to sell your carbon as oil or gas and use hydropower to power even offshore rigs. So there's a number of things we can do, and I'll continue to work on those.
Thank you.
Well, I'm all for solar, wind. However, if you look at it, the technology's not there for it. It costs you 26 cents per kilowatt as opposed to coal, 3 cents, right? We want to talk about electric cars. Where do we get the power for those electric cars? Through the gold-burning pans, okay? You hear, like I said earlier, that I read everything, and I'm a businessman. I learned what works and what doesn't work. If you look at the science behind it, the science has been askewed. There is no global warming. The Earth goes through a cycle, okay? It is common. It goes through a cycle, and we will recover. So to say that man is creating a negative footprint on the Earth is wrong.
Thanks. Well, I won't engage in the global warming conversation. Certainly the climate in Alaska has changed in my 40 years here. You used to be able to look across the bay and see the glaciers, and they're not there anymore. If you haven't lived here, you know, if you haven't lived here for probably 35 years, you don't even know that they ever really were visible. But I think that renewables are really an important aspect. I know I work in an industry where we are avidly working on renewables all the time. It's just really, really expensive. And John was correct. The cost of renewables, it becomes at some point a feel-good thing. You feel good because you're using renewable energy, and then you complain about what your electric bill is because you're using renewable energy. That's the side of it that we see where I work. But I think that working on renewables is an important thing. I think in the short term, we have to have energy. We have to be able to still turn on the lights, so we have to have a reliable source of energy as the world figures out how to do cost-effective and environmentally friendly renewables. Keep in mind that many of the products that go into renewable energy products are derived from mining, which we don't like, because they have to be able to extract the rare earth minerals that go into the panels, the solar panels. So there is, you know, cradle to grave, there's a huge environmental impact when you build and provide renewable energy products. And people don't talk about that very often, but it does exist. So I think renewables are something that will come if the world, if the United States and Alaska were as committed to getting renewable energy as we were to getting a man on the moon, we would have been there already. Had we spent the time in the last 30 years focusing on renewable energy, we wouldn't be having the conversation. We would have viable and reliable renewable energy.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
You are listening to the Friends of the Homer Public Library, District 31 Candidate Forum here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. The forum was recorded on Friday, August 6th.
Let's get some fun questions. Marijuana. Please explain your thoughts on marijuana. Can taxing it help the state budget crunch? And there have been a number of measures to stymie the sales of marijuana in the Homer area. So tell us how you feel about the legalization of marijuana as a budget source, and about the process to allow the commercial sales of marijuana in the Homer area.
Sure, and I'm the chairman of the Health and Social Services Committee in the House, and what we see more than anything else is the severe detrimental effect of alcohol use in Alaska. And as we know, alcohol lowers inhibition, increases aggression. We have domestic violence, child abuse, many of the ills that we all know other than car wrecks. Caused by the use of alcohol, and if we could convert any of that usage to for those people that want to chemically change their mental condition and went to marijuana, then we would be saving our society a huge cost of social costs that we have from alcohol. So that's. You know, I voted for that, and I told people before the last election that we should do that because of the effect of lowering the temperature and lowering rates of domestic violence, child abuse, and other things in Alaska by something that relaxes somebody instead of lowering their inhibition and makes them aggressive. So that's the first part of that. The second is that you know, I sponsored an amendment to House Bill 75 that was to make define cannabis clubs. I learned at the Council of State Governments that the one problem that states have is if they have legal cannabis and then they don't have any place for legal consumption, you have a real problem because you cannot impact the black market if it's not legal to consume it anywhere because the person doesn't own their own home. So that didn't make it through the final passage, but I'm hopeful that we'll get better definitions.
I apologize for having to stand up. I had both knees replaced here not too long ago, so if I sit too long, they stiffen up, and then when I do get up, I'll fall down. Like, oh, this guy's been smoking. This is not a touchy subject. Wanting to be your representative, you don't go there being with your personal beliefs. I believe in the lesser magistrate, right? If 51% of the people, let's put it here, if this one individual here says no to the subject and the rest of you say yes, should I just fight for this one person? Or should I, as your representative, enforce and make it as safe as possible as you want. If it's the other way around, where this is the only person over here, I'm not mean to pick on you, this is the only person over here that says, yes, he wants it, and you say no, then it's my responsibility as your legislator, your representative, to take your voice and make that so. Okay. Now, the other question, and this is, I'm going to get you involved in this. How many of you still have your parents still alive? You know anybody that's suffering from Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer? If we had a product that would cure that, would you still be against it? Okay. Yes, we know that the hemp, and that's another industry here that can create a lot of jobs. And it was just brought up at the meeting with the governor the other day. And they're interested now about creating some type of hemp farm because of the product that it produces. For example, do you know if you take hemp and grind it up and mix it in concrete, it makes concrete 20 times stronger? Do you know the Declaration of Independence written on hemp itself? Here's another question for you real quick. Abraham Lincoln even annotates in his memoirs, it's one of the things I read, that he used to like sitting on a stoop at night and smoke a little hemp. But I'm not there to do that. I'm there to represent what you want. So my personal opinion does not matter.
And if you live in Homer, you know what my personal opinion is about this legislation. My perspective is, well, it is personal because I don't think that when you are representing people, you're required to set aside your personal values and your opinions. That's part of what makes you the representative that they elect, is what your values are. And I have for 12 years represented this community, and only when marijuana came to the table, and I did not bring forward the vote, the question, should we vote on this? But when the question came forward, let's put it to a vote of the people, and the board came to impasse, I said, if I have to vote on this, my vote is going to be, no, it's not going to be legal in the city of Homer. And so I provided a path for people to find a resolution that didn't require me as a single individual to enforce my values on the city of Homer and the residents here that had chosen to legalize marijuana in this community. Legalize marijuana to me, and even particularly clubbing, looking at the statistical data of who are the users of marijuana, they are primarily the party age young adults, 20 to 25. They are still the primary users. And having grown up in Homer, I can tell you I have a really good understanding of what the drug and alcohol culture is in this community right here, on the peninsula right here. And drugs become, marijuana and use of marijuana in a party environment becomes a huge gateway to other things. Marijuana in and of itself, for a lot of medicinal purposes, if we were talking strictly about medical use of marijuana, it would be an entirely different conversation. But the legalization of marijuana provides an avenue for a lot of other social norms that we are really not probably interested in seeing happen. You think you have an issue with the heroin right now, open the door so more kids go to more parties using marijuana, lowers their inhibition, and then they use other drugs. This part I know from growing up in Homer, Alaska. So I think it was, it's an issue that I have taken a positive stand on, and that's where I'm at.
Thank you. Let's talk about some social issues.
There's some bottles of water behind you.
Oh, there you go.
Water. He's got his. Great.
Good, thank you. Planned Parenthood. Would you vote to support legislation that entirely defunds Planned Parenthood for providing any counseling or medical services?
Yes, I'm against Planned Parenthood. As a combat veteran, I'm going to tell you what it's like to take someone's life. Okay? Once that round comes out of the end of that barrel, and you take that person's life, there's no taking it back. Now, I don't suffer from PTSD because I have the ability to compartmentalize that stuff in the back of my brain and keep it there. But I know there are days where I look and I see individuals and I go, geez, could that have been the person that I took his life? Now, in the Navy, one of the jobs I did is a counselor. I used to counsel women, young sailors, about birth issues. They would come up to me and they say, Chief, I'm pregnant. Now, as my responsibility, I was supposed to give them all the tools that they needed. It killed me, but I gave them all the tools. Now, with the military being so short and small, I meet a lot of these women in the past. And they walk up to me and they say, John, Chief, I should have listened to you. I see people with their kids in the neighborhoods, in the parks, and I wonder what my child would look like. We have to stand up for the unspoken voice. They don't have a voice to say, hey, I want to live. Give them a chance. So that's why I say life begins at conception. There are no excuses.
Okay, I want to focus on a part of what you ask that maybe, you know, the area where it becomes rather gray. You said all services. I think there are services that potentially are provided that should be provided in a different way, because with this industry, when they provide any service, it's attached to the negative services of abortion as a control mechanism for pregnancy. And in that capacity, we should not be funding them as a government. This is a very divisive issue, and our government creates that division by continuing to use tax dollars of those people who do not support the industry to support the industry. And so that is, I mean, to me, that's an inappropriate use of those funds. There are avenues to access support for unanticipated pregnancy that are not provided by the government. People have access to care. It's not the society that we were in, you know, 30, 40 years ago where no one was providing information services. That society has gone. So I would support, I mean, I would not vote in support of continuing those services. I would support in reallocating the good part of that that they provide into a different format than what they're using right now.
Thank you. One of the things that I believe that the Republican Party stands for is freedom, and that's freedom, responsibility, and accountability. And I think that people have those choices to make themselves. I think that women have the choice to make themselves. They have the responsibility, but they also have the accountability. If someone talks about, well, somebody might make a mistake, that doesn't mean that the government should come in and say, oh, we're going to take over all your decision making over yourself and your life. So I am, first of all, on the abortion issue itself. I think that's a woman's right to control her reproductive body. And so that's that issue. Planned Parenthood provides numerous things and lots of sex education training throughout Alaska, as well as other parts in the Northwest, without doing abortion counseling at all. We have the kids here in town. There's a whole group. I can't remember what FAT stands for anymore, but the kids that do the peer education, that's where you actually get the best education, because they're listening to other teens that have been educated in reducing sexual contact or reducing pregnancies, reducing, making sure the good choices are being made. All of that kind of goes away when you say that the voluntary organization that provides materials and education materials will not be funded at all. And therefore, there is no one else stepping up on a broad base to provide those counseling and educational activities. So I would not be in support of defunding Planned Parenthood for the non-abortion services.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.